KO, and here we go. Welcome to another episode of We Talk Music. I am your host, Mr. Brett Podcast, and we are live and in your ear. And today I am super happy to welcome the writer, singer-songwriter of the iconic song Cry Little Sister from the movie Lost Boys, G. Tom Mack. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Brett. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. You know, it's always great to be able to talk to singer-songwriters like you, because I mean, you're able to, you know, your knowledge of the music industry and what you bring to it is just so amazing, because I mean, you've worked all over. I mean, whether it's scoring movies or TV, you know, just doing albums. I mean, what a career you've had.
Yeah, it's sort of daunting sometimes when I think about it. I don't think about it that much, but now that you bring it up, I go, wow, I've done all of this stuff. It's sort of like, yeah, it has its attributes. It's very much, you know, once I started to get into it when I was a very young 13-year-old kid, just getting my wits about me, rocking in my room, bedroom, and learning how to play guitar. I never thought that I would go on to do all the things that I was fortunate to do in this business.
Well, one thing that I do kind of want to just quickly touch on for our listeners is they may know you as Gerard McMahon, but I know that now, of course, you've been working as G. Tom Mack for a while, and you changed it because of pronunciation of your name.
Yeah. So
if you have just a short version of that, maybe?
That was Gerard Thomas McMahon. At one point, I should have done it years ago, but it was just like one of those things where, you know, I didn't think that my name would be that difficult to pronounce, actually.
That seems fair.
You know, but, you know, it was. People would call me Gerald or Jerry or McMahon, or, you know. Nobody knew how to really pronounce my last name. In fact, I made it easier on the Lost Boys album after doing several soundtracks with my spelling, McMahon. I changed it to McMahon. Just so that would make it easier for people to pronounce, you know. But yeah, so anyway, it's just about, I got to think around 2000, I was just in the process of making an album, and I decided to call it G. Tom Mack. It was an album that got a lot of, you know, critical acclaim, and a lot of songs from that album went into movies and TV shows. Nobody knew who G. Tom Mack was. They didn't really equate, like, my history of, you know, Lost Boys and Fast Times at Ridgemont High and the other 50-some-odd movies I had done. Well, I'd probably done only about 35 movies at that point. But anyway, it was nobody really figured, oh, and then it became like, what's your real name? And then people caught on. But it was a lot easier for fans, you know. These days they just call me G or G Tom, you know. So, but it's certainly, it's better than having your name, your proper name, pronounced improperly.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that I think that I appreciate about the G Tom Mack name is the fact that it's distinct. It's very different from what you would normally hear from somebody else.
Well, a rapper, you'd probably have, you know, a rapper. That was the one thing I thought to myself, well, people are going to think I'm a rapper now, G. Tom Mack.
But, yeah.
You know, and once you start, I just committed to it. And once I went down that road, it just was, you know, now people know, they know who. The first few years, like, oh, you're the Lost Boys guy. And then a lot of people didn't know who wrote Cry Little Sister, who performed and wrote Cry Little Sister from the movie Lost Boys, the theme. And for many years, in fact, you know, there was a period right when, you know, Napster and all of that stuff was coming about, people thought it was the Sisters of Mercy who did Cry Little Sister.
Oh, wow.
I think it, yeah, it was a real, I mean, if whatever happened in the Kaza days, Napster, people, it was credited as Cry Little Sister, Sisters of Mercy. And they'd never done a cover of it. They had no business with it at all. So, yeah, so that was some figuring out to do. And in fact, when YouTube first came along in the early days, we had to get on. There was about 50 videos with Cry Little Sister by Sisters of Mercy, and we had to tell people, hey, we don't mind you putting it up on YouTube for your little, you know, for your channel, but you've got to take down, you know, you've got to put the name properly. And people didn't equate. And they, believe it or not, they fans, you know, I actually did it personally and said, listen, you need to change this up. You know, you can either say Gerard McMahon, a.k.a. G. Tom Mack, or whatever. So, but now it's sorted itself out after a lot of, and now I have a name, and now people know who Dick Cradle's sister. It's not the only bloody song I wrote either.
No, no, for sure. I mean, so many great songs and so many albums. One of the things that I really noticed is that, you know, you're never pigeonholed in the music that you do. You have an ability to write, like, basically any kind of music that I hear. And so is that you attempting to kind of branch out, or is it just what comes naturally?
I think I've always been attracted to many different types of music, you know. I've never been locked into one particular thing. I'm not someone also I'm also someone that doesn't live in the past. I mean, I appreciate the music I grew up with, but I mean, in my day, current day, I listen to Juice WRLD. I'm a big fan of Post Malone, and you know, things of that nature that are the modern tip. And yes, certain pop things, you know, whatever. And I tend to gravitate to the more edgier kind of thing, music that has a bit more of an edge to it, and authenticity. But I feel like it's been an attribute, especially for writing songs, this sort of chameleon aspect that I have going on. I guess that's the best way to say it as a writer. And it's, you know, it's drawn me a lot of attention with the likes of bands back in the day like Kiss, and recorded a song of mine. And it's not like I wrote the song for them. I wrote a song that was very sort of AC/DC-ish, a song called Is That You? And they loved the song. They recorded it on their Unmasked album, I think it was.
Yeah.
And then one thing led to another. You know, I just ended up, you know, Roger Daltrey approached me because he had heard songs I'd done, heard an album of mine, and ended up writing, you know, for a classic rock singer. And then it morphed into Eminem hearing my music. And, you know, it's many different types of, you know, artists. I feel really blessed to have been able, that people have gravitated to what I do as not only as an artist, but as a writer. So, yeah, it's been a good ride with all of that. So to answer your question, though, I try to, sometimes it's when I make my own records, it's just, I try to really focus in on what it is with me, or an album, which whatever an album means in these times. But I try to keep it very focused as to what I am as an artist. That doesn't mean you can't stretch out and be, and take all those other elements that you have creatively and apply them to what is me as an artist, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the fascinating things is the fact that Eminem picked up your song, and that, you know, Ice Cube. I mean, what a wide variety of artists. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you don't expect these things, really. I was so surprised when Ice Cube, you know, reached out and had me write the theme song to what was a very, you know, hip-hop R&B theme song to the Players Club. He didn't really know that side of me, and I happened to, there was a music supervisor who asked me if I'd be into writing a song for, you know, the Players Club, which was the song to open up the movie. So I came up with something, and Cube happened to love it out of 30 some other things that he was listening to, and I didn't really think I would get it because, you know, it's sort of, you know, it was a very R&B. I mean, I can write R&B. I love R&B and hip hop, and I just had a go at it, and it just seemed to be the one that, you know, stuck out. We did get Casey and JoJo to come in and sing the song, sing my song, but it was something. Yeah, I mean, it's always a learning experience as a singer and a writer, you know, because I'm always when you go into, it's not like a world I didn't know, but it's one thing to appreciate and love hip hop music. It's one another thing to do it, you know, create it, you know. So it just proved to me that I had a sensibility, that my sensibilities creatively were able to apply itself to coming up with a hip-hop slash old-school kind of vibe of the song with what I did for the Players Club.
Is it like a different mindset that you have to get into to be able to write a song for TV and the movies versus an album?
Yeah, you kind of do. You've got to get into, first of all, you know, on one tour, never write the song that is, you've got to write a vibe of the song for whatever the film is, whatever the story is. I believe that songs have to ride and create the atmosphere around what the story is, not write about what the story is. I mean, I know some songs do that for films, depending on the film, but, you know, in the case of a good example is Cry Little Sister, I basically read a script and then I didn't even see the movie. They just sent me a script and I wrote the song because I was just sort of taken in by the story and the whole idea of youth finding itself, finding others that create a family outside their bloodline family. And it was just fascinating to me when I read that script, and it just so happened to work for the film. It was the first time I'd ever just read a script and wrote a song to a movie. In the case of TV shows, it's really a lot of it just licensing songs from my catalog, and that's pretty healthy. A lot of, you know, these various TV shows have been drawn to my music. And again, you know, they pick things that are atmospheric to what, you know, what works as a background piece or a featured piece of music in a show.
Well, yeah, that's one of the things that I'm noticing a lot with TV, especially on a network like the CW, is where you have these real moments for a music break to come through, and they do go out and find really good songs. And I applaud their you know, searching for these songs, because they really, you know, they can dive deep in some cases and pull out some excellent tracks.
Yeah, there's a few really good music supervisors that really, there's quite a few of them, but there's a girl named Alex Bustavis, who's probably best known for The OC and quite a few other television shows primarily that she does music supervision for. And there's an art to doing that. Sometimes, and you also, you got to remember today, a lot of directors and showrunners, if you will, or people that are creating these things, they have an idea as what the music flow should be. So when you bring in a music supervisor, that supervisor basically is able to provide many different forms of music that a director or a creative person that is creating the show can tap into. And but she's quite good. You know, she had my music in quite a few television shows, and actually there's a show called iZombie that's using one of my songs that I wrote about 25 years ago. And that's the other great thing about music. Songs, you know, it's something that you wrote years ago can appear, you get a license for it, you know, that they want to use it in a modern day film, or for that matter, if it's a retro film or whatever. So there's a beauty to all of that.
Yeah.
Songwriting work.
Yeah, that is really cool. One thing I listened to today was your version of "There's Always Something There to Remind Me," and I have to say that for me, that's one of your best vocal performances. I think fantastic work.
Thank you. Well, you know, I recorded that song live, and I was doing it live as an encore coming back, and it was sort of like, sort of surprised the audience that I just got up and just did it acoustically. And I started doing it, and it was just, I've always loved that song, you know, and I just sort of made it my own in its way. And by doing it acoustically, it slowed it down a bit. And I noticed literally the first time I ever did it live, I could see, you know, when you're performing, you can only see a few the first few rows because of the lights and stuff, right? And I noticed in the audience, there was about 20 girls, women, just tears rolling down their eyes. I'm going like, down their face. And I just went, wow, this is effective. I'm having no idea that it would do that. And so I just thought, I should go and record a version in the studio. And that version that you're talking about, it was done live in the studio. No overdubs, just bang it out, play acoustic, set up the sound, and just, and then it was brought to my attention to shoot a music video for it. So we did. I don't know if you saw that, but it's pretty cool as well.
Yeah, no, actually, I didn't see that, but I'll definitely have to go check it out. And I know you've got some live shows coming up. You're doing the Texas Fright Fest in May.
Yeah, it's like one of the bigger. I've done quite a few of these, Comic Con, whatever, pop horror festivals, and they're quite. They're quite good, actually. They have, this one particularly as it brings in, it's like sort of the Coachella of, the pop culture horror world. And so it's probably one of the bigger ones that I'll be doing. That's in May, I think May 3rd through the 5th. I perform on the Saturday night, the 4th of May. So, yeah, it'd be fun. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, so
there's other gigs that have been booked. I can't even remember what they are. I know L.A. May September 21st. I generally don't know until I look at the schedule. I just go, okay, where am I going in a week's time?
Yeah, that's the good thing about having just let it go and make sure that people are booking dates. That's all that matters.
There you go. Yeah.
So what does a G-Tom Mac concert look like?
Well, this phase of it, which is really cool, we've got multimedia screens that basically, because what I'm doing this time going out, we actually started performing a lot of songs from the musical live, and they've been going over really well. We did a stint in England and Scotland a few months back, and we performed most of the songs from the musical live, and it went really well. And so, but we had a few media screens up on, screens with like that indicated what the musical is to be and where it's sort of visuals for that. And it's really kind of hard to explain what they are, but they're very cool. And so it's just basically my keyboard player and myself, and we have one other person, a drummer, that joins us as well. And it's just a fantastic sounding show, if I may say so. And then but what's really cool is now we've gotten the entire musical. We're performing live with all this media screen stuff, and it looks it's fantastic, and really proud of it. And that's what we're going to go out and do, starting on the 3rd of May in Dallas, Texas, at the Texas Fright Fest weekend. So it's it's hard for me to explain, really explain what it looks like. You have to come out and see it. I hope we come up your way at some time.
Oh, I would love it if you were able to come up, because, I mean, honestly, the musical's fantastic. Like, I was listening to the album as well, and, some of those songs, I mean, I think Long Hot Summer is my favorite song off the album.
Was I your everything? Did you wake me from a dream? In some complicated game where I'd give you all of me. I felt your blowing wind as you lit a candle flame. I swore you'd go with me, surrender to be one.
a single that we're releasing in May, and there's a video for it and everything all ready to go. So that's interesting that you keyed into that, because I it's hard sometimes to know what songs are like the standout songs, but I've always felt that even when we perform it live, it's really effective. So good ears on your part.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. I mean, and that's one of the things that I noticed. Like, there's a lot of different sounds in here, but you can see how it always kind of forms back into the greater whole. I mean, when you talk about like Death by Stereo or Frog Brothers, I mean, they're very different from each other, but at the same time, you know, they fit so well within the context of the whole album.
Well, thank you. And the one good thing about doing a musical, Brett, is that you can get away with doing different styles of music that all sort of, again, you have to all have it make sense to the hub.
It's a blood drip job and it don't pay what, and it's 24/7 on the week. Looking for clues and signs of the poison kind. It's a frog's life searching every freak. A cop don't know how a vampire strolls. That's a frog's job loaded specialty. Protect and serve no matter how absurd. That's the frog bro policy.
That was Frog Bro Hero, for example, which is the Frog Brothers song. It's very sort of Tim Burton-esque, you know, or Danny Elfman, if you will. Kind of, you know, you could hear that song in a Tim Burton movie, you know, any one of them. But it's got that whole sort of Wizard of Ozzy kind of vibe to it. With the Munchkins and what have you. But I can't even remember what the name of that song is, but...
I got power of sound that turns you on. Got power that fuses and plays the sun. When the night can get dangerous, who you call? Come to Stereo, brother, for you all. What you feel is my flow, go ear to ear. It's the power of positive, you hear. Where the evil comes on and life is wiped, I lift you up to your peak and back. Stay with my magic till the dawn. Gonna smoke it up good like Cheech and Chong. The evil is everywhere we go. Smoke them out, boom like this.
Race to the blazing sun, knocking out evil ways. You know the get down.
Once you drop that bucket,
hit my stereo.
Maximum defined,
hit my stereo.
Cracking that mob of crime,
hit my stereo.
And then there's Death by Stereo, which is very sort of, you know, chic Nile Rodgers, David Bowie kind of inspired in a way, if you will.
Sleep all day. Party all night. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. Nothing like nocturnal waves, 24-hour shades, party power. Wake up at 5 p.m. That's a right about when magic hour. Oh yeah, when all you geeks break loose from the workaday news, I'll be rolling. Our breakfast of Chinese chow and my whiskey sour. I'll be grooving.
Piled on it.
The drag about daylight, everything so bright and demeaning. Are you gonna waste away in the sun-drenched job and all your
dreaming?
About the boys and girls of the boardwalk world making party. Come on and flip your switch, baby. Life's a bitch, let's get on it.
Let's get on it.
Cause there's nothing like a sleep all day.
Then there's Sleep All Day party all night, which is, you know, almost borderlining on Bruno Mars meets the Ramones or something. I don't know.
Now that's a mashup right there.
I'm telling you, right? And I don't even know if that's correct. if that's the right explanation of that.
Come in my heart, open my eyes, a better world to realize. Where is the good? Why do we wait for something positive? I take a breath, I let it out. I question why, in all my doubt. I know you're here, I know you're there. I just need to feel, feel. Let us read the hard times, angels and ghosts. My soul.
But yeah, you know, I'm really proud of this musical, and it just takes so long in getting these things off the ground. And thank God I have two really good producers in New York who have been very successful in the musical world. But anybody will tell you, I mean, Cyndi Lauper, who one of my producers worked with on Kinky Boots, it took her 10 years to before you know, the writing process, putting all the writing of the book rather, and in the songs. It just takes so much time because there's rehearsals. I mean, there's workshopping it, and then you go before you have any kind of rehearsals of what it is. And then there's set designers and there's you know choreographers that you have to consider, and it's all these putting together the right tune that gets what the look and of course the actors and actresses, but just the whole panoramic view of what goes into a musical takes time, and it's it definitely is the hardest thing I've ever done.
Yeah, I can well imagine. I mean, I guess it would probably even be somewhat similar with the Lost Boys TV show. I don't know like how much you're involved in that, but the fact that it's finally back on again, we've got a pilot going again, so it's going to be a good year for vampires, I'm guessing.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you bring that up because I have been involved with it. Just the producers of the show are Rob Thomas and a guy named Bill Binley approached me about you know the overall tone and the music and what can happen with a new version of Cry Little Sister, which I did just recently. I think you have a copy of it.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's sort of I sort of went down a vibe of rock star by Post Malone-ish kind of vibe, and it's modernized. So I've been working with them, and it's the pilots. They're just editing it now. They shot it up in Vancouver, actually, and it's set in modern time, and it's very much it's a really CW kind of show, you know, and from what I can see from the script and what I've seen so far. And it's a very young cast, it's a very diversified cast, which is cool. And it's the Frog Sisters instead of the Frog Brothers. And I'm giving you a lot of information here. So, but it's cool. And I think, you know, we'll just have to see by mid-May if everything, has been put together in a way in which it's, going to fly. so to speak.
Yeah, I find that when they, like, I've watched several of the CW shows, and when they hit something and when they get it right, they really get it right. So I think I think that's the hope here.
Well, I did a show called Arrow for them, and that was at least the first two or three seasons were pretty cool of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's so much, and there's so much variety. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of superheroes now in TV, but I think, you know, it's great that you can mine the superheroes, that you can mine some of the movies, and especially when you take the chance of making the Frog Brothers, the Frog Sisters, and you can really go in a different direction. And I think what it does is like, as a fan of the movie Lost Boys, it helps me to... You know, I'm not necessarily comparing it to the movie as apples to apples. I'm looking at it in a different way. I'm looking at it as a reimagining, and I'm looking at it as just another piece that's building on the universe.
Yeah, and that's what one should look at it as. I think, you know, hardcore fans, the minute, and I can understand this, by the way, but they were very much, I saw all the various online comments, and they were basically saying, oh, this is blasphemous, this is horrible, this will be crap, it's on the CW, they're going to make it squeaky clean, whatever. And it's not going to be the same as Lost Boys, the way that it, and, you know, even though the characters are pretty much going to be in play, but it's all set in a modern time, and you know, the movie is what it is. And one thing I've done with my musical is to tell a backstory to where David came from and where how all the vampires came together. And that's, you know, my book for the musical is really more giving an idea as to where they all, how they all came together, and a deeper sort of significance to it without losing the humor and sort of pop culture factor that's going on with my musical. It's still all about finding family, being youthful, but it's also, obviously, it's dealing with the vampire and immortality. And if anybody knows anything about people in their 20s, you don't think you're ever going to die. Yeah. And that's sort of like there's a little parallel I've got going on with that. But my musical has a bit more meat on it, if you will, just because it's depth is the word I'm trying to find. And it feels, my musical starts in 1972 with David in an orphanage in Lithuania, gets adopted by a family from Nova Scotia, and he speaks perfect English by the time he comes over. And he's a bit odd, but he'd already been infused by the vampire venom by Max, who runs the orphanage in Lithuania. And so he's being groomed, basically, to be a protege of Max, to be the ultimate vampire, to go out into the world and conquer. But we get to see a lonely side of David through it, and we also get to see the significance of Star, who's a lot stronger in my musical, a la Me Too. And so there's some real substance to it. But the great thing, what I've not gotten away from, is kept that sense of humor about all of what this is, you know, what Lost Boys did as a film. So... too hard to get into all of what the musical is about, but you kind of get where I'm going.
Oh, absolutely.
But the TV series is a completely different thing. And it's like, I just have to wait and see, you know, what it is to get committed and involved in as a ongoing series. So, and that's all depends on if the CW picks it up after seeing the pilot.
Mm-hmm. Now, how exciting is it to be able to work in a world and to help flesh out the world of the Lost Boys? I mean, you've certainly, because as you said earlier, when you started, it was just a script into a song, and now here it is, it's a full-blown musical, there's comics, TV shows, sequels to the movie. I mean, just what a universe, and you're such a vital part of it.
Well, I never would have expected that to happen. When I look at all these films that I've done music to, and this particular film, in its iconic way, it stood the test of time. Not to say Bad Times at Ridgemont High and 16 Candles and, you know, this one and that one weren't iconic. They certainly were. But this one just, this one was the movie that basically, you know, put things on the map for me as an artist without people knowing who really did it. And at that point, I was just sort of fed up. I didn't drop out. I got so fed up being on the road, had bad management, and made a few good albums, and they were all critically acclaimed. And I just had it by being on the road and beating myself up. So I got into a mode of songwriting for other artists, and for a period of time. And, put myself in that mode, and also writing for films and TV and what have you. But it was time to go back out and do this again, and I'm happy I did, you know, and sort of gain my reputation as an artist again, and then just basically pursue things that made sense to me, musically, and go out and perform live, because there's nothing more interactive, and people coming together around music. So that was where I started, and that's where I continue to go. But it's all of it counts, you know, writing for other people, being an artist, and, you know, but I have to say, being an artist back out and doing this stuff for the past few years I've been doing it has proven itself to be an incredible ride, and it continues to grow again at this point in life.
Well, and I think, what a great thing for your career, the fact that people can hear that you've had this song that was big, but they're able to see your career, and now they're hearing everything, and it's kind of like this rebirth for you, I guess, in a way. And that, you know, there's a whole other level of a career there.
Yeah, there really is a whole other level of a career. And I think the musical is, not just because it's a musical, but I think this musical album, A Lost Boys Story, says a lot about what I am as an artist. You know, it shows many different sides, but it doesn't, as we were talking about earlier, it doesn't get away from what the essence of what it is. And yeah, I mean, my voice changes a bit here and there, but pretty much it's the same guy, you know. And obviously I sang all the songs, with the exception of This Neverland, which I brought this kid in, J.D. McCrary, who's an amazing young singer, artist, and to sing that song, it's the Laddie's song. And I took it upon myself to just really focus on making it a great musical, sing all the songs from the musical. But obviously later, once we have the cast all in place, there'll be a cast album as well, a la Rent or West Side Story, that kind of thing. So, but for now, the whole purpose of going out on tour and is performing this musical all around the world live, so people get a gist as to what it is and what's coming.
Well, I mean, yeah, and like I say, it's exciting because I mean, I'm really a big fan of the album, and I love the different oral notes. I think it really works on so many levels for me.
Well, thank you.
But so I mean, I know that you've been so generous with your time, and I really, really appreciate that. One thing that I just wanted to ask, like, do you think that there's going to be a new G. Tom Mack album besides the musical coming up?
Well, interesting you should say that. When I did Always Something There to Remind Me, I thought, you know, maybe I should do some real cool select cover songs that just are in that vibe. And so I might do an EP of that over the next few months. But I'm always writing, and I'm probably, by next year this time, I've probably either made a whole album of cover songs, or go and just make a whole new, you know, surprise album of just new songs. But it's kind of intriguing to me doing this covers. You know, I did a cover version, this haven't put it up yet, but the Stevie Wonder song, Till You Come Back to Me, which Aretha Franklin did. And I did it much in my own kind of vibe. And I've been enjoying taking these songs and just flipping them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I did a cover of Ariana Grande's Love Me Harder, the duet she did with The Weeknd, Your Fellow Countryman.
That's right.
And I love him, you know.
He's loved him
in the beginning. Yeah, I used to love his mixtapes that he used to do before he had a record deal. That's fantastic. So, but yeah, I've done a cover of that, and I may record it. It's really cool. So just a mixed bag, so to speak, of different things. So, of songs that I want to put together that have a thread, you know.
Well, and it's I think that's the great thing about music, right? Is that, and I've talked to so many people about it, is that when you look at it, great songs are just great songs. It doesn't matter who did them, but if it's a great song, then have fun with it and play it, you know.
Absolutely. So, man, that's what it's all about. It's all the music, doesn't, you know, and one good thing about doing cover songs is that it sort of lets you know where you came from, you know. It shows another side of to yourself what you are as an artist, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, because I mean, all those songs that you know are a part of you that really helped form what makes G-Tom Mac, I guess, in that case.
Yeah, well, it's a good. Certainly, I couldn't agree more.
Well, G-Tom Mac, I do appreciate you coming on the show. It's been a lot of fun.
My pleasure, man.
Let's get you to tell people where they can find all your work, and once again, let's reiterate the Texas Fright Fest and the musical, just where everybody can find that.
Well, you can Instagram me, G-Tom Mac, Instagram, on obviously Facebook. You can come on. There's A Lost Boys Story, which is the both Instagram and Facebook that you can go on to, and Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter, G-Tom Mac. And as far as the musical album, you can download it and or stream it on Spotify, and iTunes can be downloaded for those people still doing that. You can actually get CDs of it. CDs are available, which I actually signed CDs at shows of A Lost Boys Story. We're going to do vinyl coming up here soon as well. So, but Spotify, iTunes, A Lost Boys Story, the musical, and I'll be out doing shows. So just keep following me on the various social medias. There's always something coming up every day. I'm always talking about various things, not just about me, but just things of interest that I like to share, that kind of thing.
Well, absolutely. I urge everybody to go and have a listen, because you know, I think they should totally get the chance to hear it and really, you know, start to experience the extra world of the Lost Boys. We're going to put on some of the Cry Little Sister new version that you did, which is spectacular. I love all the versions of Cry Little Sister that you've done. You've really managed to like, you know, have a lot of fun with that song, and it's really cool.
The one version I did for True Blood was when HBO asked me to come up with something, and I did, and I made it bluesy, and I thought to myself, this is either going to really suck or it's going to be really good. There's no in between. And I really enjoyed doing that. You know, just, I don't know if you've ever seen that
version. I did. I listened to the song, the version, and yeah. It fits so well in the blues.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It was a cool little video, too, that they, you know, shot. So, yeah. Well, anyway, mate, it's really been a pleasure meeting with you, or chatting with you, and sending my best out to all your people out there and fans. and look forward to performing in your lovely country of Canada soon.
Well, I look forward to hopefully getting the chance to see you, G. Tom Mack, wonderful guest, and all the best in the future.
Thank you, my friend. All the best. Take care now.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Last fire will rise behind those eyes. Black house will rock. Blind boys don't lie. Immortal fear, that voice so clear through broken walls, that scream I hear. I can't forget why you